Welcome to the Belfast Men's Health Group podcast with myself, Paul O'Kane, and Finian Murray from the HSE and the Men's Health Forum in Ireland. Finian is going to talk a wee bit about men and masculinity. So, Finian, thanks very much for agreeing to do our wee podcast, and we might as well get straight in. Tell us a wee bit about men and masculinity.
Well, listen, thanks for having me on your podcast series, and I was listening to some of the others, and some of them are, most of them are excellent, actually, so it's great to have with this. Yeah, in terms of men and masculinity, like, I work as a senior health promotion officer on men's health in the Republic of Ireland with the Health Service Executive down here, and we do a training course called Engage, National Mental Health Training Programme. And, you know, the whole thing about masculinity comes into our training in a big way. And we go back a bit further. We go back to the making the distinction between gender and sex, you know, like, sex differences, you know, are the biological differences, whereas gender, you know, differences relate to socially constructed and culturally describes masculine and feminine characteristics for men and women. So when we look at gender versus sex, you know, a lot of what we perform as men in terms of masculinity is kind of learned behaviors, kind of socialized, where we're kind of socialized into, you know, into becoming men from the time we're boys. And The whole thing around, you know, you have to be tough, you have to be strong, you have to be self-contained, taking charge, solving your own problems. There are some of the messages we pick up, even as small boys. So that's all part of what we call the construction of masculinity. And basically then, when we become adults and we feel we need to get some help, we have, you know, this thing in our heads which says, oh no, I got to deal with this on my own way. I have to sort it out myself. I don't need anybody's assistance. And that's where some of the problems, I'm not saying all, but some of the problems around men's health would come in. For example, we live an average 4 years younger than, or earlier than women do, and we have a higher morbidity rate at all ages for all causes of death. So they're the main thing. So when we explored a bit about masculinity, then we used to think that it was just kind of one masculinity, one way to be a man in the world, but we have since learned through research, and this was pioneered by a writer, R.W. Connell in Australia, who says that, you know, that there are basically multiple masculinities at play in society. So not just the difference in power differences between men and women, there's huge differences in power between different groups of men. Mm-hmm. And he calls them the dominant masculinity, he puts a name on that called the hegemonic masculinity. And I suppose in the Western world, it would be, you know, white, middle class, heterosexual, highly educated, able-bodied, employed men. So they would be kind of them, they would be the king of the hill. And other groups of men would be somehow subordinate or marginalized from that dominant group. So this is something that Connell picked up on, and it's something then that we have taken on board in the Engage training course. So, you know, like, for example, there's marginalized masculinity. So, for example, you know, maybe traveler men or asylum seekers, refugees, like, their health status would be a lot worse than the general male population. And some of it would be because they are marginalized in society and don't have the economic power to, you know, to live a healthier life. Maybe they might have to, kind of deal with a lot type thing. So that's just one example of I said, like, there are different ways to be a man in Ireland. So part of our training is that, you know, like, you know, this is not written in stone. It can be challenged at any time. For example, when I was growing up, there was no way a man would push a buggy down the street. And now it's just commonplace. So all this changes over time. So that's the good thing about it. And by us highlighting it, then we can change it even more, because when men subscribe to this kind of dominant hegemonic masculinity, they kind of put their health on the back burner. So we want men to be more proactive about looking after their health. And that's why we're interested in this area of work, of research.
You've talked a wee bit about it there, but what role would you say society or socialization plays in masculinity? Now you've highlighted some there. Could you expand on that maybe?
Yeah, you know, like, if you think back to your childhood, if you think back to when
children... Hello, Finian? We've lost you there.
Oh, God, just, right. Can you still hear me, no?
Yeah, you're back in.
Just ask the question again.
I'll go with that question again, and then we'll kick start. Right, well, so we've got the other bit, so we'll just go. Right, Finian, so what role has society or socialisation played in masculinity? Now, you've touched on it there, but if you could expand that a wee bit.
Yeah, like, basically, if you think back to your childhood, and when you're in the playground at school, and if you fell, like, as a boy, somebody would come up to you and say, "Now you've got to be a tough little soldier, hold back those tears." Whereas if you're a girl, they'll come over here, Mary, we'll mind you, you know, and you get a hug if you're a girl and so on. And it begins there. So that's kind of how we're socialized from a very young age. Like even something like when a baby is born, if it's a boy, to put it into a blue outfit, and when they're a girl, to put it into a pink outfit. So it begins at the moment of birth, and you're socialized into those two different genders then all the way through until you become an adult. So it is changing a wee bit, but still the economic and social roles of men and women are changing, but the traditional values and attitudes towards gender remain the same, like, pretty much. So, like, even this morning in the news, there was the whole thing about the footballer who came out as openly gay. Mm-hmm. I mean, we should be beyond that at this stage, but it's still making the headlines.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I suppose now if we... I'm sort of moving on a wee bit. I'm going to drill down to a wee bit about, you know, just what you said about in the playground, that boys don't cry. And then as you get older, I guess probably what I'm trying to come to is around how do men deal with bereavement in particular, which is, I guess, you know, having lost both my parents, it's very difficult. How could, you know, what's the difference between men, or how do we cope with bereavement?
Yeah, well, that's interesting, because Men and women sometimes cope with grief and loss in different ways. Like the research is now telling us that men and women, we actually process information, like, differently, you know. So for men who are recently bereaved, you know, they will feel shocked, numb, guilty, angry, afraid, full of pain. It's a bit like, you know, those five stages of grief from Kubler-Ross, you know, begins with denial, then it goes to anger, bargaining, depression, and acceptance. Now, it's not a linear line. It's you can go two steps forward, one step back.
Sorry, Finn, just go through those five stages of grief again.
The five stages of grief are denial. So, like, when that's the initial thing that, you know, that people sometimes experience when somebody close to them dies, they don't believe it. They're actually, oh no, this didn't happen. Mm-hmm. And then they get angry that this has happened to them. And then they get this bargaining stage, oh, why didn't they take me instead of her? You know, this sort of thing. And then the realization is beginning to sink in. And a lot of people then go into depression. And then the final stage is acceptance. So you get to a point where you are able to live with the loss. But it's not just, as I was saying, it's not a linear line, you know. Sometimes we can feel you can run in circles in a tube. But ultimately, when you get to the acceptance stage, then life becomes a lot more bearable. So they're what we call the five stages of grief. Mm-hmm. And they were spotted first by a writer called Kubler Ross in America.
Mm-hmm. And I sort of, through your involvement with the Engage training, is there anywhere that men would tell you, or where you could sort of advise men to go to express their feelings or emotions, or is there a safe place where they can go to do that?
Yeah, what we have found, would you believe that, like, for a lot of men, I mean, there are counseling services, there are bereavement counseling services available for men and women, but mm-hmm. what we have found is that men don't turn up as much. And it goes back to the masculinity and the socialization piece that we mentioned earlier, that mm-hmm. men kind of take this loss on themselves and they say, I'll deal with it in my own way. I don't need to get support for it or get help to deal with it. So, but the services are still there. They're actually the counseling services that will tell us that, you know, men are poor attenders and they don't turn up as often as women do. So there is definitely room for improvement there. And also what we have found as well, since the men's shed started mm-hmm. up, like say for men who have lost their partner, you know, when they go down to the men's shed, they mightn't even talk about the loss. They could be talking about other things, but the distraction of the shed has been very beneficial for men. And a lot of men who attend the shed, especially widowers, they have said that only for attending the shed, they would be in a far worse place. So we would encourage men to, you know, not to, you know, wallow in it, especially if they're towards the end of their lives and they have lost their partner, but to actually get involved in something in the community like the men's shed and distract themselves. And that in turn will help them go through the stages and get to the acceptance stage.
Mm-hmm. And so moving on from grief and that issue, what can we learn from women in general?
Well, women, as we all know, are much better at talking about their problems and talking about issues that they're dealing with. And mm-hmm. and talking is good. Like we all the training, in our training, we recommend that men talk more, open up more, get more support. So if we could, like, talking therapies are very, very beneficial. So if we could get men to engage more in them, and basically, you know, like if we talk about loss and the feelings, and you can talk with your family, friends, support group, healthcare professional, even your GP, and also, you know, if you can get back to a routine and everyday activities, then you can be patient with yourself if you have difficult days. But, you know, we need to stop keeping our emotions bottled up. We need to think that when we look for help, it's a strong thing to do, not that we're weak in any way. And it's important that if we're struggling to cope, that we don't feel guilty, you know, that life is tough and we shouldn't be hard on ourselves. And mm-hmm. we should also try not to turn to drugs or alcohol to actually deal with the stress or the bereavement, because that relief is only temporary. So just to make that point as well, mm-hmm. we need to be a lot more positive in the help that we seek out.
And do you think, I mean, just from my own personal experience, I think that men, I think we're getting better. What would be the general sort of population? Would you think that that's true, that we are talking more?
Yeah, we are definitely getting better, and especially the younger men, you can see some of the celebrities who come on television and they're opening up about their mental health and so on. Like, that wouldn't have happened 10 or 15 years ago. So definitely the younger men are opening up a lot more, because they probably are not subjected to that traditional masculinity that we were brought up with. And they're quite happy to open up a more, like people like Brezzy and so on, who've been quite open about the struggles with mental health and anxiety. And that gives permission to other men to do the same. So, you know, we can never underestimate the power of role models, because men are always looking for champions, and if they see somebody out there championing what they themselves are going through, they will feel the confidence then to seek help. So it's good to see that the younger men are definitely opening up a lot more.
Yeah. So, sort of taking a swerve or heading around the corner or taking a right turn or moving on, the use of humour. How can we use humour to get health messages to men? Or is that a good way of getting health messages out there, do you think, Finian?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And if you look at any of the television ads on television, the ones you remember are the ones that have made you laugh in some mm-hmm. way, you know. So the private sector have copped this for years, in that the corporate sector have copped this, that when you use humor to sell your product, you have a much higher success rate, you know. So mm-hmm. there's a great quote from a writer called Virginia Trooper: it's not what's taught, but what's caught. So if we can get our students' mouths open for laughter, we can fit in a little food for thought. I think that's a nice quote, insofar as, you know, that it's important that we actually use a bit of humour when we're trying to get a message across. And, you know, the colleges are telling us that children laugh on average about 400 times a day, whereas mm-hmm. adults laugh an average of about 15 times a day. So we have lost our 285 laughs along the way. We claimed them back, you know. And if you look at the Man Manual, is written by Dr. Ian Banks, and he is a very humorous man, and he has it all through the Man Manual, and that's why the Man Manual is such a success, because men pick it up, and as they're reading it, they're smiling as well. They're getting, mm-hmm. you know, they're laughing a bit there, some of the gags I remember one time listening to Dr. Ian Banks, and he was talking about middle-aged men, and he was saying that for a man, a middle age is when your prostate is bigger than your brain, you know. it's lines like that that make you remember, you know. I remember another comedian said one night that men die on average 4 years less than women do. Why? Because they want to. So but they do help you to remember. They do help you to remember the message that you're getting, trying to get across. So humor, you can't underestimate the power of humor, especially in the area of men's health. It's been a great servant to men's health over the years, and the tech kept us very connected with men. So I would definitely advertise. They are advocates of the use of humour. I will make the one caveat, though, is that all humour has a target. You have to make sure that the target deserves it. That's the only thing, you know, that inappropriate humour can do more harm than good, you know. So, overall, it's very hard to get the mental message out there.
Yeah, and I remember reading a quote, I think it was from Brian Darcy, who said, really, we need to be more we need to be more childlike, not childish. And childlike is, do not lose that ability to laugh, as you said. As you get older, you tend to get more serious. Okay, Finian, so Men's Health Week then is kicking off on Monday the 13th of June, and the theme for this year is Mission is Possible. So let's take in and expanding that theme. What is possible for men in relation to masculinity, do you think? That's a massive question.
That's a massive question, yeah. It's a great chance every year to get men to focus on their health. And this year is a fantastic theme, because it's actually playing on the Mission Impossible theme mm-hmm. from the movie franchise. And one of the phrases, like, when you think back to watching Mission Impossible, every episode started off with so that's your mission. Should you choose to accept it? That was how it started off, right? So for mental health makeup, what we're saying is all you have to do is set yourself a realistic and practical task to improve your health and go for it. That's your mission, should you choose success. So that's the way that we're playing around with the team this year. And it's not just for the week. We are also, it's not just the one team, because the tagline is that the action starts with you. But we're also going to, you know, have a sub-team for each of the days for men's healthy. So Monday the 13th of June, this focuses on mental fitness.
Mm-hmm.
Tuesday, prevention is better than cure. So that's looking at heart health and prevention of cancer. Wednesday, 15th of June, food for thought, looking at healthy eating.
Mm-hmm.
Thursday, we're rethinking your drinking. It's you know, it's a focus on alcohol.
Uh-huh.
Friday is trash the ash, so it's just encouraging men to give up cigarettes.
Yep.
Saturday is let's get physical, be more than a sports spectator.
Mm-hmm.
And Sunday is Father's Day. Fathers can make wonderful things happen and possible for their kids. So there's the social media teams that run on the different days for Men's Health Week. So if you have anything to contribute there, we would welcome it. Any of your listeners, we would welcome. You know, there'll be there's the hashtag hashtag Men's Health Week, hashtag Mission is Possible, and hashtag The Action Starts With You. So we'd encourage you all to get the hashtags used
and get them up and operating. Yep, we'll definitely be doing
that.
A big push out there.
So,
we're now drawing this to a close. Time flies. You know, we're almost at this, almost 20-25 minutes. So it's been, time flies. So the last couple of questions, and I suppose this one's geared to you, and it's just simply, what makes you happy?
What makes me happy as well is my wife and family, and also enjoy my work as well, very much the whole area of men's health and all promotion of men's health. But on the downtime, I like to walk, I like to read, watch a good drama on TV, and I play a bit of golf some weekends. So they're the main things that I like doing, you know, in terms of once I'm doing most of those things, I'm quite happy, you know.
Now you've mentioned golf. I don't play golf, but I hear guys talking about handicaps. I play off a 2, or I play off a 5, or a 10, or something. I don't even know what that means. But do you play off anything?
I play off what somebody said one time. What's your handicap? My handicap is my golf. No, the. Well, would you believe? It kind of is really, because I'm playing off, is it 21.4 or something? So something very high. So
okay.
I'm not going to threaten any of the famous golfers anytime soon.
Yeah.
But it's about just playing to your own handicap and enjoying it. You know, just getting out and getting the exercise. It's a great way to get exercise as well, of course. You know, you're walking for 5 hours sometimes, you know. So
I'm gonna put this over to my colleague and co guy Brian, because he plays golf, and I'm gonna say to him, what do you play off?
10.
Oh, he plays off 10, Finian.
Oh what? No, I won't be playing with him anytime soon.
Oh.
He's out of my league.
Sneaky one. Okay. So the dream job, Finney, and I, you're not, you did say you did like your work, but if you can't go beyond that, if you had the opportunity or a dream job, or if I give you 10 million quid or whatever, what would you do?
I think my dream job, if it was talented enough, would love to have been a writer, you know, a writer, like a kind of you know, somebody who kind of wrote a couple of good books, and you know, and that people enjoyed them. Yeah, so that would have been my dream job had in another lifetime. Would you believe my son has actually, he's living out my dream job, because he wrote a book during lockdown, and he's after getting an agent, and he's after getting a publisher. It's coming out now it's called Fling, and it's coming out in the spring of next year, you know. So
brilliant.
I I pass on my dream job to the next generation.
Okay. What do you call the book again?
It's called Fling, and it's by Joseph Murray. So you can look out for it in the spring. Yeah.
Brilliant. Finian, absolute pleasure, as always, having a chat with you. Thank you.
You too, Paul. Great talking to you.
And that was brilliant. Happy day. That was really spot on. I think that I have learned a lot, and that's why Brendan and myself wanted you on, because I wanted to know more information about masculinity, and you've covered a lot in such a short space of time. So thanks very much.
No, thank you, Paul. Thanks for having me on. It's fantastic. Yeah,
not well at all.
Great,
all right. Thank
great
you.
Series, yeah. Okay.
Okay. That's it. Well, you can. That's us finished now. So there you go, Finian. That's it. So thank you.
Thank you.